And as most of you know, you've heard me say it to the point of redundancy. I came from a law enforcement family background. I was raised by my grandparents. My grandfather was a high sheriff of Sedgwick County. All my uncles and cousins were all police officers. I was the black sheep. I went to law school. I don't know what that says about me, but my son-in-law is a sergeant with the K-9 Division. So I've been around it my whole life. And what I'm seeing is much different than what I saw as a kid coming up. Generally speaking, the bad guy was, drugs or alcohol or, there was some external stimulus that was, causing the bad behavior. But as we were just talking about the number of kids under 14, the highest it's been in 20 years, when it comes to kids killing kids, it's a much different scenario now. I mean, the last week we saw what, three mass shootings in California? So please don't sit there and try and tell me too many guns is the cause. California's got one of the strictest gun laws, or some of the strictest gun laws in America. Didn't seem to make a difference. If you're hell-bent on killing someone, you're going to find a way to do it. And I'm afraid it's not in small part due to the change in culture. We've seen it over and over and over again. With me is Sergeant Betsy Bratner-Smith, spokesperson for the National Police Association. Sergeant, thank you so much for being with me.
Rick, thanks for having me, and thank you so much for your continuing and unwavering support of American law enforcement.
Well, people, this whole defund the police movement, we've seen the result of that in Minneapolis and Portland and San Francisco and on and on and on. Now they're doing everything they can to get more law enforcement. If you don't have rules, regulations, guidelines, parameters, then you've got nothing but anarchy, and nobody wants to live with that. It was. I got to tell you, when people say they have a foregone conclusion to law enforcement, I think about this past week. My son-in-law, great father to my grandkids and husband to my wife. I had a chance to. He's in the middle of training with his second K-9 partner. He retired the first one after 7 years. So I'm looking at this, and he's doing everything he can to get the dog off the guy. And it's just, to some people, I guess it looks violent. To me, it's okay. He's doing what he should be doing. 48 hours later, he's holding a 7-pound, his first son. And that's one balanced individual right there. They want to go home to their wives, their kids, throw a burger on the grill, whatever it happens to be. And, for the vast majority of law enforcement, they want a safe place to live. They want a safe place for their kids to go to school. They want to go home at end of shift. Somehow we've got to send a better message.
Well, you're absolutely right. I mean, we have had 2.5 years of the most extraordinary vilification of American law enforcement that I've seen in my lifetime, and I have been in the profession since the late 1970s. So what's happening now is people are realizing, I truly believe this, that after 2.5 years of calls to defund the police and the police are the problem, people see now with their own eyes that it's not the American law enforcement officer that is the problem. We have a lot of problems in this country, but cops are not the problem. And yet, we are, frankly, cops are leaving the job or we're leaving certain states, going to other states, and we're having a hard time getting young people to come to this profession. And in the meantime, we're seeing this extraordinary rise in violent juvenile crime. And of course, as we have been talking about this week, we have these three mass shootings in California, although people are only really interested in talking about two of them because the third one is probably in Oakland, California, is probably gang violence. Nobody likes to talk about that.
Right.
We're living in a sick, violent society, but we can't seem to reach the logical conclusions of how to prevent this. We know how to prevent it. Cops know how to prevent it. But we still can't get the political class and the activists to understand what we need to do.
Well, from my vantage point, having done this for a couple of decades, you take the suits in D.C. where I worked, they fall over themselves, stumbling and bumbling, trying to get in front of a TV camera. The heavy lifting rest with changing the culture, the family that doesn't exist, the kid with no father, all of the things, and it's not easy, and it certainly doesn't play well in the media. So what they first go to is, well, we need more gun control laws. You know, you take that pistol out and set it on a table along with an empty magazine and some ammunition, and let's all sit and wait for that thing to jump up, load itself, and go out and find a victim. I mean, that's nuts. It makes no sense. It's not the hardware. It's the software behind the hardware. But nobody wants to address that.
Well, and you're absolutely right. When you look at surveys, you know, 45% of American adults admit that they live with a firearm, but that those same 45% of households are not going out and committing crime. There's a small percentage of people who are committing crime, and yet we're not allowed to talk about why they're committing crime. We're not allowed to talk about things like extraordinary drug addiction, extraordinary mental health issues. And in fact, we're now living in a society that pretty much says, you know what, act how you want, do whatever makes you feel good. And you know what, the rest of us will just have to deal. So now we have, again, and it's not just juveniles. When you look at these two Asian mass shootings in California, both of those gentlemen were relatively elderly. And we have a motive of one, domestic violence, sort of. The other one, we're not even really sure. But as we look at these, and in fact, the Secret Service just came out with their study and, on why we're having these mass shootings. And there's been a couple of other studies. And we're finding out that restricting firearms makes no difference in these mass shootings. So we've got to find out what is causing people to, what you and I decades ago probably called go postal.
Exactly. You know, we talk about it from time to time on the show. And, some people will dismiss what I'm, well, Rick, you're biased. You come from a law enforcement family. Okay, all right, I'll take that. But by the same token, I've been carrying for 20 years. And I've never had to draw down on anybody. I think the worst I've ever done is shoot two water moccasins that were after my dog. So, I mean, at the end of the day, I look at it this way. When it comes to this whole, for whatever reason, they think if they talk gun control enough, somehow it will get them the disposable vote of the constituency. You know, it's 4 o'clock in the morning. God forbid you hear somebody break in downstairs. You check to make sure your wife or husband's there. You check to make sure the kids are in bed. You get your weapon, your cell phone. You take up a position between the perceived threat and your family. Dial 911 and hope they get there before you have to do something. The fact is, you're your own first responder. Hopefully for a very short period of time until you can get help. So, the whole gun control argument for me, seems to be going out the window, and people are realizing, you know what, it doesn't have anything to do with that. It has to do with alcoholism, drug addiction, depression, mental illness, all the things that nobody wants to take the time to get into because it's the heavy lifting. It's a change in culture. If you don't have rules, regulations, guidelines, parameters, then you've got a society out of control, and that's what we have.
Yeah, and you're absolutely right. When you look at this study of mass shootings from 2016 to 2020, 93% of these shooters, it says, were experiencing some sort of personal significant stressor. 93%. I don't know, Rick, have you ever experienced some sort of really stressful situation in your life? I know I have. And you know what? And again, I've been carrying a gun since I was 21 years old. I'm currently 63. I never thought to walk in to a library or my employer or a school or you name it and shoot the place up. So as you know, you're absolutely correct. It's not the guns, it's the culture. And apparently we're right now in a culture where people can no longer deal appropriately with stress.
No.
And that's a problem.
No, you're right. Sergeant Betsy Brantner-Smith, spokesperson for the National Police Association. If you can hang with me just a second, got to do a little business. When we come back, you've been doing this for a minute. You know what you're talking about. Maybe a few suggestions on how we turn the corner. 1-800-288-WBAP. 1-800-288-9227. It's a pandemic of death in America, and it's got to stop. All right, welcome back. A few more minutes with Sergeant Betsy Brantner-Smith, spokesperson for the National Police Association, talking about, the things you read about every day in the news. Youth violence through the roof. Higher than it's been in the last two decades. Mass shootings. I was looking at the predictive analytics in criminal justice. Insider relationships, school and workplace shootings, almost always committed by individuals with some type of inside relationship. Mental illness. Now, all of you politicians that want to get in front of the TV camera, take note, mental illness. Almost 70% of mass shooters exhibit signs of mental illness. Criminal history, approximately 65% of mass shooters have a criminal history. It just goes on and on. Sergeant, at some point, we've got to start turning the corner. I'm not exactly sure how we do that.
Well, there are definitely some things that we can do. First and foremost, we have to fix the broken criminal justice system that we are now operating under. We have got to stop talking about equity. We have got to stop talking about procedural justice. We have to remember that Lady Justice wears a blindfold for a reason. It doesn't matter who you are or what color your skin is or your gender, and very often even your mental illness situation, if you commit a crime, we have to punish you. If you are mentally ill and you commit a violent crime, we need to have more facilities to incarcerate you and keep you away from the rest of the public until you can be cured, or at least until you can be punished and aged out. We've got to go back to societal norms in this country. We have almost no societal norms.
Yeah.
When you and I were kids, we knew what was right and wrong, and we knew that if we screwed up, our parents were going to do something about it. We've got to stop the demonization of the American law enforcement officer, which our president just did again on Martin Luther King Day, where he, what did he do bizarrely during a Martin Luther King Day speech? He called out American law enforcement officers and said, hey, when you're using deadly force, try not to make it so deadly, would you? I mean, it is embarrassing. It's ridiculous. And, and again, we have got to go back to vilifying drugs and helping people who are addicted in a very meaningful way. Most homeless people, the majority of homeless people in this country have either a mental illness, a drug addiction, or both. And what is the call now for the homeless is to get them housing. If you get them housing without helping them fix any of those other problems, you're just going to perpetuate the issue. Again, this is all very logical stuff, but we don't have the political leadership, and very often we don't have people in this country, just normal people, who really are going to talk about this in any meaningful way.
Yeah, you're right. We're out of time, but Sergeant Betsy Brantner Smith, spokesperson for the National Police Association, I've enjoyed spending some time with you. Hopefully we can talk again.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. We love our Texas community and your show especially, and we appreciate what you do.
Thank you so much. We appreciate that.